Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. A radio.com sports station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
Well, you don't have that extra pull to pull from in the minor leagues, right? Like when, you know, just to bring extra. So you really got to be cognizant of, and Tommy and our pitching department does a great job in this, but like being really on top of like the numbers game of like in between bullpens. And if a guy doesn't get a start on his day or get an inning in, you know, and how we fit that back in and not having too much layoff and but not overworking guys, which is really on my radar, our radar. Heavily. So I think the main thing is just, you know, eyeballing it. We there are some rules where we can roll the inning here early on after 20 pitches if we need to, and then still send this the starter back out if we don't want to extend a certain inning. There's ways around all that with the rules that Major League Baseball put in place to help protect the arms that we have in camp. So we're aware of all that, and that it will be on our radar if guys start to have extended innings of how to kind of navigate through that.
That's Cubs manager David Ross. He's got a season under his belt already, and now he's just the old pro. We're looking forward to having a conversation with the new voice of the Marquee Network, the Chicago Cubs play-by-play man, Boog Shambi, in just a bit. Did you hear Rossi messing around with Gordon Whittemeyer and Russ Dorsey? That apparently there was a ball. I didn't know the whole story, but I guess he was criticizing their communication on a foul ball that was hit into the press box.
I was thoroughly amused by that. But Rossi, hey, you're always coaching somebody up, so why should the media be any different? If they aren't fielding, then there's got to be a discussion there, you know? The communication among fielders is key.
I do understand what he's saying, too, about managing the pitchers now and trying. They're so careful. And I know that at some point there's diminishing returns in micromanaging some of this stuff, but there really is a responsibility and a diligence to know, like he says, the bullpen pitches matter. You know, I always found it funny that when you talk about a pitch count and you have those warm-up pitches and you're like, do those count? Like that your shoulder doesn't know what the clicker is actually counting and what it's not. So I guess they're trying to make that as much of a science as possible. Joining us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford on North Avenue in Melrose Park at apford.com, is the new television voice of your Chicago Cubs on Marquee Network. He's on Twitter at Boog Shambi, and here he is. He's Boog Shambi. What's going on, man?
I love that guy. Wait, what? How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good, good, good. Just doing some work, you know, getting ready.
Good morning, Boog. Yeah, we're excited. I'm sure you are, too. When you process this spring training, what you've seen out of this Cubs team so far, what is your emotion level as you get ready for the games that are coming up?
Well, I mean, I think selfishly I'm excited because it's a new job and it's exciting because I know the passion level for this team. You know, I talked about how much, you know, the fan base is passionate, and you know, certainly since this 15, the expectation level has, you know, gone through the roof. And as far as being just, it was, last year was hard. I called every game that I called with ESPN off of a monitor. So I was not at the last baseball game. I called a couple of college basketball games in person. The last one was in December. I did Illinois at Duke at Cameron Indoor Stadium, and there were 100 people there. And then the last baseball game that I called was actually at Sloan Park in person. Was at Sloan Park, the game where we had Rizzo and Bryant mic'd up. So I'm excited. I'm just looking forward to being in the ballpark and watching guys play and just watching this team.
The first Marquee Sports Network broadcast with you and JD is going to be tomorrow, 2:05 p.m., with the Cubs hosting the Kansas City Royals. How do you look at the way a relationship is built with a local television viewer? Because it's an intimate relationship that you have.
Yeah.
You are on in the house. You know, this is the case. Right. Your voice is going to be a part of my summer, and right? you're going to be in the home with us. How do you look at and how do you think about that relationship?
It's a good question. I think that the first part is you've got to know as the viewer that I'm enjoying it. And so I think it translates through the connection JD and I have. We both don't take ourselves very seriously. We both like to play. We both love the sport, and we'll at times geek out on topics, and then at other times, you know, joke around in terms of pop culture, whatever. I think I've always been cognizant of the fact that because it is every day, you know, you feel connected to the broadcasters. So there's a familiarity there. But I think that knowing that we're there and enjoying ourselves is a big part of it. The other part, you know, when I was doing games on ESPN, the one thing I tried to have it feel more local in terms of, I just wanted the conversation to be casual, to be fun, and to not feel, you know, stiff and networky. So I just think that in the end, if there's something, I'm trying to be as close to what I'm like when I'm just hanging out, when I'm on the air. And if there's something that is my, you know, comedic sensibility off the air that I might just randomly try or notice or remark about, I probably will do it on the air because that's what I'm like. And I think that that's probably the starting point. If you do you, I think you're probably in, you know, you're in the best place to form a relationship with the audience.
We always talk about storylines, of course, leading into the season. That's part of the fun, the speculation, and therein.
Yes.
What are your personal storylines you're looking for in this team in spring training?
I mean, I think it's pretty simple. I'm interested. Like, this team finished 10th in the league in runs per game, okay? And, like, it's 60 games. It's small sample for sure. You're talking about, I think, 37% of, you know, what is a standard big league season. So it's a small sample size. But with that, just with the lineup, the names that are going to be written down in this lineup, I'm most interested to see what type of year do Bryant, Baez, Rizzo, Happ, Hayward, Contreras, what type of year do those guys have? Because I just, I know that I haven't lived and died with it every day the last few years, but I've done a lot of Cubs games, and I know how good these guys are, and my sense is that this team will score, and I'm interested / excited to see them put up some numbers. So, like, that's the number one thing that I'm following, interested in, is will Chris Bryant have a Chris Bryant year? Will Anthony Rizzo have an Anthony Rizzo year? Will Javi Baez have a Javi Baez year? So that's really it. And then probably the next thing would be, from a pitching standpoint, can a team that doesn't have velocity and much swing and miss in its starting rotation have considerable success. I think that's going to be a challenge for them this year. They catch it and defend really well, and they work hard on getting bad contact. So those two things marry up well. But for the most part, this is a swing and miss league. You know, I mean, you're talking about, you know, in Major League Baseball last year, you know, the strikeout rate across the entire league was 23.4%. So, you know, there's a lot of swing and miss available in this league. And for the most part, the teams that are really good have pitchers that get guys to swing and miss. So I think that will be the challenge.
That's been a big theme for me looking at this Cubs team. And I know they're talking around it, and I know that Tommy Hotovy says, like, well, you know, because our defense is so good, we can have these guys. Well, here's, you know, the fact is we know that batting average of balls in play is about 300. And that number doesn't care how good your defense is. That if a ball is in play, there is a 30% chance that's going to be a hit. If it's a swing and a miss, there's a 0% chance there's going to be a hit. And that's a huge spread, and it asks a lot of the defense to do it. What it also does is it means you, as a play-by-play man, may have a more interesting job. That means there are going to be balls in play. There are going to be, there's movement on the bases. There's going to be plays to be made and things to describe and to contextualize. And I think that means that you've got a little bit more work to do, perhaps. And maybe that's a good thing than just saying, oh, swing and a miss, and we'll go to the sixth.
Oh, Dan, you're speaking my nerdy love language. I'm with you. You're breaking it down like a fraction. I'm so in on that. Yes, I'm told. That is on point, in my opinion. I think that your analysis right there, I really don't have anything to add to any of it. It makes it harder when the ball is no matter how good your defense is, when the ball is always in play, it is going to be challenging. The only issue is this, and this is where, you know, the rub becomes, they probably have a little more swing and miss. They do have a more swing and miss velocity in the bullpen. But the bottom line is this. This is the rotation. So, like, you can't, you know, we can't keep asking them, are you worried that you're not going to have as much swing and miss when it's a rotation that doesn't have a ton of swing and miss? You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
they're not going to transform, you know, into this giant swing and miss staff. So moving on, let's see how the results play. And then, you know, you figure it out from there. But I agree with your assessment that that's for sure.
I think the most live arm is the one taking the mound today, and that's Albert Alsillai. I want to see what he does, especially after he's been described as this sponge taking in all this information, asking all these questions, what the time off has meant for him, and how he's going to inculcate that and actually show his performance on the mound. I think that time off and that experience matters. What do you think we're going to see out of him today?
I think I need to look up inculcate is what I need to do. I am not that bright.
I love that word.
Liar.
That is
you're
a great
awesome. Just
that
nerd,
too,
nerds, nerds, yeah, nerds, I'm in.
Too instill. I love it.
No, look, you're 100% right. He is the one guy that he is the one guy that probably on this staff that has the best chance to get swing and miss, to be a power arm that is, you know, more like what I talked about that is around the rest of the league. I mean, the main thing that he did, he's always had a breaking ball that was inconsistent and kind of sweepy, and it performed at times like a slider and at times like a curveball, and they effectively at the alternate site, they split it into two pitches, and the slider is the one that really took off for him and got tons of swing and misses. And that is in baseball 2021, the slider is the swing and miss pitch. It is the strike to ball. It looks like a strike. Now it's a ball swing and miss pitch. So he's the guy. I know that Jake is excited with how much interest Alzolay has in, you know, absorbing information. So I do think that in following up, that's the guy that has the chance to be the outlier on this staff, to be different, to be special. And we'll just kind of see. But I know people are excited. I got a chance to see him throw live BP the other day, and it was, I mean, it's really cool to see that stuff, that slider. I also, Jock Peterson hit one 7,000 feet off of him too, which was cool to see.
Some of the pitch lab science behind what you're saying about the truth of that slider is really interesting. I was talking to a pitching expert who was explaining about when they tunnel up pitches and when they say this pitch is going to work off of this pitch. The difference between the release, anybody who's watching on Twitch right now can see what I'm doing with my fingers. The difference between the release of a spun curveball where the ball leaves the hand moving slightly upward as the thumb comes up, and the way a slider can leave the hand gives less of a clue to an attentive hitter that you get the break, you get the action, but the deception is greater when you tunnel up the fastball with the slider.
Yeah, because, I mean, look, you're trying to make every pitch look like a fastball. I mean, that's basically because that's the pitch that they have to honor the most, but that's 100% right. And so, you know, being able to tunnel certain pitches, and then also, you know, where you throw them in the zone. So normally, you know, the curveball works well with the four seam fastball. Alzolay throws that two seam fastball pretty well. And again, the other part is, you know, the two outcomes you're looking for is this. You're looking for swing and miss, and if there's contact, you want it on the ground because there's no slug on the ground. So, you know, again, that's what you're trying to do. But there's no doubt with the Edgetronic cameras that they, you know, have used, and most teams sort of, you know, gobbled up the science from Driveline out in Seattle. You know, they look at those pitch grip, and it's amazing, like the subtlety. You know, they talk about when Justin Verlander went from Detroit to Houston, that a tweak on his slider that was, you know, not even a half an inch in terms of just like tilt, that fixed his slider. And it was through the use of the, you know, Edgetronic, you know, they're high speed frames but super slow mo cameras, and the Cubs have those set up for all bullpens and in their pitching lab, as you mentioned.
Boog, last year wasn't just a down year for all of us and the fact that we didn't have as much baseball inventory. It was also a down year because your shoes didn't get the proper love that they should.
God, you're the best.
Are you gonna at least tweet pictures or like show on camera on the Marquee Sports Network what kind of shoe game you're working with for everybody?
I'm a little embarrassed. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tweet the what I'm wearing today, but I'm a little embarrassed by the fact that I'm a kind of a sneakerhead. I just wander into being a sneakerhead. If you're advocating that you think now, like Jock Peterson and Jason Hayward will shame me because they have, you know, 97 million more, but I have a decent collection. And I am willing to put myself out there. I have a toe dipped into showing off my sneakers, and then I go and scramble back and hide a little bit. So we'll put them out there.
Lastly,
talking about your shoe game with multimillionaires who are in the show and messing with you versus talking with us who are just shoe fans are two totally different things. There is a place for all in this spectrum.
Okay, don't yell at me. Don't yell.
I just don't want you to listen to just them. We're here to help promote.
Thank you. Yes.
I want to know too what your balance is, what you're planning to do regarding all of the available, not just metrics, but with StatCast and cameras. There's metrics and there's measurements, and they're different things. And look, I could eat up all of the weighted runs created plus and weighted on base average and fielder independent pitching and xFIP you could possibly give me. I can't get enough of it, but there isn't enough of it. There is at some point. It's just where people make people's heads spin and they get angry and they shut down and they don't understand. How are you going to make sure that you're on the right side of history with some of this stuff while also knowing and trying to get a good feel for what the audience wants and is willing to accept?
Look, I'm not trying to turn it into math class. I'm not. But I feel as though one of my skill sets is identifying what's interesting. I'm not a math expert. I certainly will go over certain things. You know, on the internet, I find deep dive articles, and I'll have to like connect with some of my people and be like, hey, person that's a lot smarter than me, explain this to me. So it's not, so I'm not interested in going math equations on the air. That said, you know, you used it. There's a lot more stuff that's measurable now. And it's interesting how all these, you know, one of the things about baseball right now is that the adjustment to the adjustment to the adjustment is happening so quickly. And the stuff that is happening off the field is so fascinating. Unfortunately, at times right now, what it produces is not always the most entertaining product because the ball's not in play a lot. But in terms of, in my opinion, all of the adjustments that guys are making with swing paths and planes, and then the pitching in relation to those swing planes, and on, it's so interesting. I kind of trust my judgment, but I'm not interested in overwhelming people. But I also think that if there's an opportunity for people to learn about the game or learn about their team, we're going to go for it.
And what you can do graphically now, too. I mean, you talk about the moment you mentioned the swing plane thing, that's where my head always goes with Chris Bryant. And we spend a lot of time talking about his mentality and the injuries and is he happy. And sometimes I think, you know, his bat lives in the bottom of the zone when that's where it's supposed to live. And you hit the bottom third of the baseball and you launch it and you put it into the outfield. And then, like you say, it didn't take very long. All of a sudden, you're throwing 100 miles an hour at the belt and you got stuff upstairs. I can't wait to see that adaptation to the adaptation.
Yeah, I mean, look, Kyle Hendricks is a great example of what we're talking about, and you don't think about it. Cause like you think of Kyle as the contact guy, but Kyle does get swing and miss. And one of the things I'd anticipate is more curveball usage from him this year. He used it a lot more last year and it was a very good pitch for him. But even Kyle is a guy with, you know, below average velocity with one of those guys that has that uppercut swing plane. He is capable, because he places the ball where he wants as well, if not better than anybody in the league, he's capable. You have an uppercut swing plane? Yeah, I'm going to throw my four-seam fastball at 88 miles an hour above your barrel, and you can't get there. And he's able to do it. So, he, even though he's not four-seam monster fastball guy, he's able to operate because of location with his four-seam fastball to combat bat path, bat plane that is uppercut with a four-seam fastball that is technically below average in velocity. So I just think that type of stuff is really fun. And, I'm not going to try and, you know, sit here and turn it into, like, long division practice on the air. I swear I'm not. I'm going to try and show and lead JD to break down like interesting stuff. That's all. And my shoes.
I think we're happy either way, just so you know.
Okay.
But I was a little surprised to see Hendricks starting, just because you don't have to. Like, it's not like we don't know what he's working with.
Right.
But to see him start today, at least I guess knock the rust off, I'm here for it.
Totally. I think, you know, it's funny because I think you're right that he's the outlier. A lot of teams aren't, you know, the White Sox play the Brewers yesterday and like their dudes didn't pitch, the White Sox. So
right.
I think you're seeing a lot of teams that initially are just doing sim games to start. I don't know what to tell you. You know, the one thing with Kyle is he's a little different. Kyle's pretty transparent. Kyle's one of those guys that, you know, he just, because he's able to execute his plan so perfectly, Kyle will tell you out loud, there's not a mystery component to it. Kyle, tell me about your four-seam fastball. Yeah, I only throw it to righties. Okay, so I can say that on the air? Yeah, you can say that on the air. Okay, good talk. So, like, the information is that he's just able to execute his game plan. So I think that's probably part of it. Like Kyle isn't interested in being hidden away or, you know, twisting his evil mustache and coming up with some surprise plan. Like he's going to sit there and think about what works, and he continues to make his own adjustments. I talked about, you know, uptick in four-seam fastball usage, uptick in curveball usage, and he's already said on record, yeah, I'm going to try and use it even more this year, and let's see if you can do something about it.
It's going to be fun. I could talk all day. Boog, look forward to talking again very, very soon, and we look forward to the start of your Cubs and marquee career tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
I'm excited about it myself. I'm sure I'll say some really dumb stuff, and you guys can light me up for it, and I'll be doing that all year, but I look forward to talking to you guys again.
Cool. It's a deal. That is John Boog Shambi, the voice of the Cubs on Marquee Network. When we come back, we have to talk about the Luke Kornet game. We have to. And Jordan and I also have to hash out what's going on with NBA Top Shot, because we both have a pack, or we have the rights to buy a pack, and I don't know what the hell is going on. We'll figure it out next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station. The Bernstein and Rahimi Show on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I'm letting Luke Kornet have a machete. I think just whatever you can do out there, you get the machete, and if you want to hack off limbs, you're free to do so. Can you call it up and just get our research department on this? How many shots has he made the entire year? How many field goals made does he have?
I can tell you right now it's less than 10.
Not for a lack of trying. And he's... So we're going to have a party when he makes a shot.
7 on the shot clock. Left-hand dribble drive. Left quarter Kornet. Rainbow three. Bam! Luke Kornet definitely needed that one. Only his second three ball in 15 attempts on the year.
We're going crazy.
LMFAO, like just fire up shots and everybody dances.
Party rock anthem, yes.
Back in front to Temple, right quarter Kornet, 4-3. Got it! Luke Kornet with back-to-back.
It's kind of like those victories when you knew the Bulls were losing, but this free throw qualified Portillo's or Taco Bell.
Exactly.
Left side Kornet. Why not, Luke? Take it. Yes. Three balls for Luke Kornet here in the third quarter.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're going to Vegas. Threes are everywhere.
The poor guy, he gets a machete.
Hot damn, Luke Kornet. Sure, it's in a loss, but those highlights courtesy of this very station where you hear your Bulls basketball, as you will tonight as well, Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's when sports radio is at its peak, is when we talk about something like that, and it happens, and now Twitter holds it all together, and Twitter starts going absolutely bat-spit crazy, and then he's not on Twitter, so I have to tag his mom on Twitter. Like, she's on there. She's very active on Twitter, so I have to put her on there, and she gets all excited, too, and she's liking things, and it's like, you know, it just gets all silly and fun.
Tracy Kornet, like I said, one of my family's favorite news anchors when she was in Dallas, and now she's in Nashville. And I love that you tagged his mom. We're talking good about your son.
Yeah, check
Tracy
it out.
Kornet.
Right? Because that's what came up. When you do a search like for Kornet, she comes up immediately because she's, you know, obviously very prominent on Twitter and in the media. And and Luke himself is not involved. But that's – and again, this is back to what we were saying before. I called his dad's games. I used to, Frank Kornet's Fort Wayne Fury would play against our Rockford Lightning. He's a pretty decent player, but wasn't stroking J's like that. I just wish they could have hung on and won the game, but not to be, but certainly fun stuff. And look, I thought they were going to get a chance to get at the Raptors without Siakam, and then there's no Raptors, and then they can't play. They got to go home.
Yeah, that was a buzzkill. But that Suns game, I try to put my phone down for at least 30 minutes at a time, sometimes to just do other things, like cool my head and not pay attention to sports. I fail at it most of the time. And I actually kind of succeeded on Friday, and I was just watching the game. And then I look and I'm like, oh dear God, this is blown up.
Yep, this
and all
is
these
happening
people
now.
Are like, the Luke Kornet game's happening. You know, 9.3 minutes, Luke Kornet's blowing up. And it continues this storyline that we have talked about over the last couple of years, which is the Luke Kornet versus Daniel Gafford minutes. And I'm here for this being the main bull angle today. Let's go with this. Zach LaVine is in the All-Star game. Mission accomplished. Everything else right now is gravy until we figure out that whole playoff scenario. I'm not even going to get into the Knicks being fourth in the East right now. So we're here with the Luke Kornet and Daniel Gafford conversation. Then it gets bigger. Then it gets even bigger. Then it gets bigger. Chris Paul and the Suns, that's a team you want to beat. But then everybody starts invoking the name of Robert Horry, and the game is lost.
Believe it or not, Jim Boylan said that he reminds him of Robert Horry.
What?
What? Sing along. It's one of those things that we sing along to now, just like Ted Phillips.
Yeah, you're part of the story now too. Like, yeah, you are inextricably linked to Luke Kornet and the Robert Horry comp. But that Suns team, they're tough, man. DeAndre Ayton has become a better player sooner than I thought he would. The energy level is up, and he's really strong. And obviously, we know what Devin Booker can do. But that is a tough and disciplined and physical team. Some of the offensive rebounds they had, some of just stepping in front of guys. The Bulls' lack of effective size and strength really showed, and you really want Wendell Carter Jr. to understand, you know, get the weight room and throw yourself around out there in a more effective way.
Yeah, we're hard on Wendell, but that's because he shows so much potential that he's almost there. But that was not his best game, and unfortunately it was same song, different verse, right? Turnovers doomed the Bulls. And that's what caused them to lose the game. CP3, 14 of 15. Come on. Like, come on.
I mean, that's a Hall of Famer, still close enough to the peak of his powers. And just the way he feels space and moves into areas where he knows people are going to vacate before the defender even leaves, and he understands where you're going to be going, and he's just sort of there. It's remarkable, his ability to do that. And also, real quick, Jordan Mally. You sat and waited, as I did, to get an NBA Top Shot pack. What do we do now?
We wait patiently until they send us our update on March 6th, but that'll give us an idea of when they're actually going to deliver the cards to us. So you'll get your chance at opening the pack, and the pack being digital. So anybody that doesn't know NBA Top Shot, it's all digital. Think of it like a physical trading card, but with videos, and it's all online, and you're able to verify every single thing. So authenticity is big. That's one of the big problems with physical trading cards.
But we don't know what's going to be in the pack.
Correct.
So it's just like a pack of regular cards. So we're going to, something's going to come to our email. I'm going to click on a link. It's going to take me to Top Shot. I'm going to sign into Top Shot. And then I'm going to, like, and how do I know how valuable any of these highlights are?
So the first indicator is if it's a gold moment. So if it's a base moment, it'll just be like a dull regular color. It'll be kind of like a gray color. If it's gold, then you've hit big because it's a limited series. You also look at the verification number on it, too. And the lower number that you have, the more valuable your card is. I was looking at, like, Zach LaVine's card, for example. Some of them are being asked for about $100 to $125, but the one that has his jersey number is selling for significantly more. So there's all these little factors that go into it. But how I was trying to explain it to my brother was, basically it's like the stock market, and you're investing in NBA players the same way that you would invest in stocks or companies, the same way that in trading cards you would invest in players hoping that their value goes up.
So how do I sell it?
It's really easy. You just put it on the marketplace, you set what price you want it, and you leave it. And then when somebody comes by and say, maybe yours is the lowest price, let's say you got a Zach LaVine for $100, you drop the lowest price to $90, somebody buys it, they'll give you a notification when somebody buys it.
And then where does my money go?
Your money goes into an account. I believe the company is called Dapper. And okay, That's how you withdraw your money. So similar to like sports gambling, if you've got a certain amount of money in your bank account, you can send it different ways, either PayPal, your own bank account. So it's pretty streamlined if you take a look at it.
And I have to declare any gains myself, or is it like, is there an automatic like 1099? I don't know. Is there a tax form?
How much money do you think you're going to be making here?
It doesn't matter. Even if it's only $6, you got to declare it. Income's income.
I don't think so.
That's a good question and something I wouldn't know.
I don't think it's a capital gain. Like, I thought $600 was as much as your report.
No, you can't hide anything from Uncle Sam. Any money's any money. I've had old stocks that I got at my bar mitzvah that made $13 in a year, and that had to be accounted for for taxes.
So I was watching somebody open their packs live on Twitch this weekend because I was interested. I wanted to see how it was actually opened. And the guy that I was watching, he pulled a Gold Moments Bojan Bogdanovic from Atlanta. And you're thinking, like, regular casual NBA fans thinking, who's Bogdanovic? And why do you want a Hawks player? But that card was going for $675. That was the lowest ask. I've seen some people that I followed throughout the NBA circles this weekend get really lucky. I watched one guy pull a Zion, and it was worth, like, $30,000.
Holy crap! He ended up selling
it. Oh, yeah, it's even higher than that. We're talking in the hundreds, thousands, 250,000. They're trying to get the first person to purchase a card that's worth over $1 million, and it's a Zion.
All right. I'm intrigued.
Is this where the Russian oligarch comes in?
Right.
I feel like there's got to be some good Russian oligarch who wants some sort of like rare thing.
The 224 texter says, we can only hope you get a Luke Kornet highlight made 3.
the funny thing is,
$9. I'm going to get in on this.
Luke Kornet is one of the cheapest options you could buy on their open marketplace right now. The last time I looked about 24 hours ago, it was $17. So if you're looking for a buy low investment in Luke Kornet, there you go, for $17.
And the 224 says gambling winnings are different. IRS reporting doesn't kick in until $600. No, that's automatic. Even if you go to the track and you make $15, technically you have to declare that. There isn't any win. Nothing's free. That's just when it's automatic at $600 when you have to fill out the forms and all that.
Do we have to get a tax? Like, do we have to get an accountant on the score for Top Shot Talk?
I've got one. I've got one. We could put on if we need him. He's probably listening right now. But it's I just get concerned about making sure that I'm because I don't want anybody knocking at my door and the black helicopters coming in and taking remanding my family away for periods of time. Because you never know.
I feel like this is like the kids who got punished for having Napster, the way you describe this. Like, some kid gets fined by all these copyright violations to the tune of like $100,000, and he's worth like $8. That's how you're making this sound.
All right, the Midday Midway is coming up next. Don't go anywhere. Bad Anthem. Really, really bad anthem is coming your way next on The Score.
Believe it or not, Jim Boylan said that he reminds him of Robert Horry.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1, 2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
It's the Midday Midway. What did we talk about to start the show today? Well, we just kind of reveled in the return of baseball, and that got us into White Sox talk and learning a lot more about Jerry Nerin's lineup cards. I just watched a Fox Sports video about it and about his calligraphy and learning more about his relationship with Israel, that there's a reason why he writes Shalom in nearly just perfect calligraphic Hebrew on there. And he was one of the reasons he was the coach of Team Israel, and it's a fascinating story. I guess his daughter lives in Israel now. He goes there a lot, and there are reasons behind all the color coding on his lineup cards. It's something I'll be paying attention to for this season. And we heard from Tim Anderson. We talked to Boog Shambi. He was an absolute delight. By the way, he just tweeted a picture of his kicks. Did you see that? I don't know what those are, but they're really cool looking.
They're Louis Vuitton Nike mashups, and I think I gotta look again, because I just retweeted them and I was laughing. They look kind of like an Air Force One, but they've got like leopard print, but I'm just dying laughing because he's like, oh, you know, the big leaguers mess with my shoes. And I'm like, those are quality sneakers. Like, what are you, he's like, oh, these old things that Jason Hayward messes with me about. Jason Hayward makes $100 million like a minute.
Right.
That's not
right.
a real stat. But you know what I'm saying. Like, of course they're going to mess with you. Those shoes are awesome.
And then we talked NBA and NBA Top Shot and what that whole thing is. I still kind of don't get it, but I'm going to get it because I got a pack reserved. So I'll open it and see what's in it. And hey, Luke Cornett had his night, and we had some fun with that. Okay, you don't mess with the national anthem, do you? You don't kneel. You certainly don't kneel because the anthem is sacred, right? We know that. You don't want to be up and getting a beer. You don't want to be talking. We know that your feelings for your country and your value as an American are entirely wrapped in the sanctity of that song that was written by a slave owner. And you got to take it seriously. It has to be deeply reverent and meaningful. Otherwise, you know what you are? You're a bad American. You're just a bad American if you kneel, because that song means everything. That song is everything. That's the troops and the bombs and all of the things and the Americanness. So, you know, when CPAC opened, they had to have that anthem absolutely perfect. So I give you, ladies and gentlemen, Sailor Sable.
Oh, say, can you see? So proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so
yelling.
It's over.
What key? All of them.
Quit yelling.
That poor piano player.
Best. Yes, that's my favorite part. It's like the piano player is like waiting, like, where now? Where am I going? That poor piano player.
What do you bet, like, some so big bad. Donor's like, hey, like, my friend's daughter really yes. sings the anthem good, and, like, you need to use her. And they're like, okay, like, you're important to this production. You've paid a lot of money here or something. And that's what we get.
Course,
confidence in the anthem is terrifying to me. Like,
oh my God.
Terrifying.
there's bad. I mean, there's people who forget the words, and there's people who, you know, repeat phrases or something. But marrying it up with that piano, with like the old fashionedness of the piano too, the way it's just sort of these little flourishes, it makes it sound like it's the background piano of a silent film. I mean, there's just so much going on there, and it's just oh.
Bless you. Made me kind of frown.
That poor piano player was trying to figure out where to go.
Exactly.
And, and we've all been there. Now for something completely different. It is an homage to one of the best movies, I think, of all time, Stand and Deliver, because we talked about who was working on the Mars rover at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena besides my brother, and I still don't really know what he was working on because I'm not smart. But this guy is. This is so cool. An East LA native who was Jaime Escalante's student from Garfield High School, the inspiration of the movie Stand and Deliver, played an integral part in the Mars mission. I just thought that was so awesome. His name is Sergio Valdez, and he's from East LA, and he was part of the engineering team. He's an engineering manager at the JPL Lab, Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. His parents immigrated from Mexico. He grew up in East LA, and he graduated from Garfield High in 1991. And he was one of the students of Jaime Escalante, whose inspiration was for the 1980s movie that a lot of us saw in school called Stand and Deliver. So I thought that that was pretty awesome.
I never saw Stand and Deliver. Wasn't Edward James almost nominated for an Oscar for that performance?
Yes. And Lou Diamond Phillips is also in that movie.
That's
and it's
La Bamba,
about how
right?
Escalante taught. Yes, and it's about how Escalante actually, speaking of Boog Shambi's math class today, taught his math students how to ace the AP courses, and they were suspected that they had cheated, and then they took it again, and they all passed.
I took BC AP Calc, and have no idea how. Like, I went by my actual textbook is still at my parents' house, and folded up in the textbook is some of my homework. It's like another life. I can't imagine having understood any of it at any point. And I never took the AP test because I didn't want to. And there was no math requirement at Duke at the time. And because I got in early and knew there was no math requirement, I was just like, out. Dunzo.
There was a math requirement for a journalism degree at North Texas, but there wasn't a math requirement at Duke?
Nope. English major, baby. Only had to take three sciences and
took
chemistry. And the chemistry was easier than my high school chemistry class. I took ecology and I took geology. And done.
I took biology, like lab science, geology lab science, and astronomy lab science, and algebra and statistics for a journalism degree.
Jeez.
And we had a minor in at least political science.
And I got a B in geology. I didn't even get an A in it.
There's no math requirement at Duke.
There is now.
On earth?
I'm sure there is now. There just wasn't then. And they changed all the AP credits. Like, now you get less credit than you used to. But because of English and U.S. history and the modern European history, I was able to graduate, like, a semester early. So it was awesome. So by second semester of senior year, I was basically, as an intern at the ABC affiliate, basically could work there full time because I only had one class. They changed all those
rules,
that's
though. What I did. I graduated in 3.5 years so I could work. What was I thinking? Stupid.
Yeah,
I gave up my last spring break. But yeah, the point sure. is, I think that's pretty cool. Point. Anybody who's watched Stand and Deliver, one of Jaime Escalante's students worked on the Mars rover. And that's why math is good.
Oh, I have nothing against it, believe me, especially if it can produce weighted runs created plus and wins above replacement. Absolutely no doubt. We'll continue some baseball talk. We gave the Cubs their due, and we'll get back to the White Sox with our guy Vinny Duber next on The Score.
Your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.